You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to have you with us. This is the continuation, and I guess you'd call it the culmination, of crossover week within the Locked On Network. And I have Eric Garcia Gunderson on. He is the host of Locked On Blazers, a writer that I've been a big fan of for a while and really fun to talk with. And we go through last year's second round series, which was a really fun stretch, and what he took away from it from Portland's perspective and how it affects the relationship between these two teams moving forward. And then plenty on what happened during the offseason. Portland signed Evan Turner and retained basically their whole team, and then the Warriors getting Durant and everything else that they did. So a really fun conversation, runs about 35 minutes. I hope you enjoy it.
Hi, I'm Eric Garcia Gunderson from Locked On Blazers.
And I'm Danny LaRue of Locked On Warriors.
Thank you for joining us for a Blazers-Warriors crossover pod as we are starting to ramp things up for the Locked On Podcast Network, including the debut of Locked On Warriors with Danny LaRue.
Yeah, it's fun to be a part of the network. I delayed it a little bit just because I wanted to be able to roll when the season was starting, but you guys have done really great work up to now.
Yeah, we're happy to have you, obviously, you know, with your vast podcasting experience with Real GM and Dunked On, and we're stoked to have you. I know that you're going to be a great addition to the network, and, you know, you're my friend, so I'm happy to have you on the team as well for that reason.
Yeah, and it's fun that our friendship was partially forged by that notable series last year.
Yeah, and I guess that's a great place to start, Danny, and a professional in every respect. And the great series last year, entertaining five-game series. It was the most evenly played five-game series that I've probably ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly helped a little bit that the best player in the series didn't play, but I thought it was notable to a degree how well Portland played even in those losses. They were competitive, and you could juxtapose it with the Rockets series, where I think that went five games as well, where it just kind of lingered, and the Blazers were in every game.
Yeah, they were, and I think even too, you know, and Curry wasn't 100% even when he did come back, and I think that when he did come back, the Blazers, you know, still were able to really score against the Warriors. You know, their guards were able to. They just weren't able to find any, you know, reliable sources of points out of the, you know, their big man. Mason Plumlee had a pretty rough series, and they just weren't able to really get enough out of all of their guys. And Damian Lillard also, too, you know, he had some great games, but, you know, he kind of tailed off at the end of the, you know, in that fifth game. And but that was an interesting series. And I think it really, you know, do you think that the Blazers are a team that can, you know, get into that top four and maybe get home court advantage next season in the playoffs?
They could definitely be a good regular season team because they can score and they play with intensity. And one of the real takeaways from the Warriors' regular season success the last couple of years is just playing with effort every game. And that is a real differentiator. And the Blazers are in that sweet spot where they've had some success, so they want to get better, but they haven't been so good that they're going to lay off the gas pedal. And I think that's something that we'll see with the Warriors. We might even see it from the Spurs, definitely from Cleveland. And that could open the door for it. The big question, as it is with all of these teams in the kind of packed tier in the West, is health. And so if Portland can stay healthy, they should have a reasonable shot at it.
Yeah, I think health is going to be a big one. They had the Damian Lillard injury for about 3 weeks last year with plantar fasciitis, which kept him out of the Olympics, or as well as when he was in the running for the Team USA. And then they had Myers Leonard get hurt as well. But other than that, they didn't really have any major injuries to key contributors. And if they get a couple, you know, I think they're deep enough to withstand some, but if it's 1-2 Lillard or McCollum, that is when it gets very dicey very quickly.
That will also be a test for Terry Stotts, just to see how, if that happens, and of course we all hope that it doesn't, with how he handles Evan Turner in this ecosystem, because one of the benefits of having Evan Turner on this team is that it is somebody else who can shoulder the playmaking load when the other player sits, or, you know, if you want to give them a little bit of time where they're not just handling it all the time, that can be very stressful physically to do that. And while I have been critical of not only the money, but just the decision with Turner, in that specific circumstance, he could really be useful.
Absolutely. I do think that there's a thing to the evaluation of Turner that is very much, you have to kind of value the things that he's going to be able to do. And I think that his value in being a secondary ball handler when one of the two guys is off the bench or if one of them gets hurt, you know, he may be able to, you know, really help with the playmaking load. And two, you know, Portland isn't going to get a ton of the big free agent names. They swung big. They tried to get Chandler Parsons. They tried to get Hassan Whiteside. And, you know, those guys didn't come and Turner wanted to come. So part of the, you know, the thing with Turner as well is that, you know, it's maybe they could have used that money elsewhere, but, you know, they wanted a ball handling wing and that's what they got, even if it is Evan Turner.
Yeah, I think that's a healthy way to think about it. And Chandler Parsons would have been better for a lot of reasons. I think he's a better player when he's healthy. But when you take those kind of players off the table, and a specific constraint on the Blazers was that this money was only available for a short time. You know, this mm-hmm. wasn't a circumstance like, let's say, Minnesota or Utah, where they could slide it over for a couple of years, because when you've drafted well and those guys are due for raises, the realistic nature of this business is that though they will cost more money and that will evaporate your cap space. And so Portland did have this narrow window. And on that logic, while Evan Turner isn't necessarily the best use of that money, they did have to use it. And if you have an owner like Paul Allen who is willing to spend, and it sounds like he is, it also changes the calculus, because you can spend a little bit more, let's call it recklessly, but you don't suffer the same ill effects as a team like, to use an example, Oklahoma City, using all Northwest teams, where their ownership seemed less willing to go into the luxury tax for a non-elite team. This was the first year they paid it. So those kinds of decisions can be more catastrophic. So Paul Allen really helps.
Yeah, he definitely helps. I mean, he clearly was actually really moved by the performance from the team last year. He reportedly cried, you know, in the locker room to the team, according to the players, after, you know, about, you know, how inspired he was by this team. So he's definitely moved. And another plus for him is that they have a buffer of time where, you know, they're going to have to pay the luxury tax in, I think, two seasons. Well, they're not going to pay it this year, and they will pay it next year. And then so they still, you know, they'll pay it the year after that when McCollum's extension kicks in. But, you know, they have a little time until that repeater tax to kind of figure out who they want to keep. And by that point, you know, the guys, they'll have only a couple years left on their deal. But who knows whether that's going to be good or bad at that point.
Not to get too CBA nerdy, though, as you know, I can. The repeater tax also might not exist at that point, because there will be a new collective bargaining agreement, basically, no matter what. And the repeater tax is sticky kind of for all sides, because the biggest thing that it has done is it has scared small markets out of spending. And that, so it didn't do what they wanted to, which is kind of scare big markets out of spending. And because, you know, teams are going to do what they're going to do. But for the small markets, it has really had that effect. And so we could see it minimized or outright eliminated, especially, I mean, the worst thing in some ways that happened to the Blazers with that is just the looming specter of the Warriors being a theoretical taxpayer. And some of these organizations might do something that's not in their own best interest just to try to spite them.
Yeah, well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't this system put in place in large part as a reaction to LeBron going to Miami?
It absolutely was.
Yeah, so you could definitely see that happening again. And so that's a really interesting wrinkle that I had not considered. And I've talked a lot about that on this podcast, you know, the time frame. And that's, you know, that's really important because, yeah, I mean, they're going to come up here on a decision here to renegotiate or not. And, yeah, they're going to have a new CBA. So, no, really interesting stuff. But about the Warriors, you know, about that, you know, a big move and people trying to spite them, you know, what do you think? You know, I read some of your stuff when it when the series went down. But, you know, how do you think what happened for this team? You know, obviously, how hurt was Curry when you saw him? And what do you think the way last season ended, you know, so the way it did, how do you think that's going to change things for this team moving forward?
It changes a lot. And I do think that Curry being under 100%, I don't have any inside information, but if I had to ballpark it, having watched his entire career, I would say he was between 70 and 80% in the finals, and that's about what he was throughout had some great performances that overtime against Portland, had a couple big things against OKC, especially in Game 7, and didn't even really have that moment against the Cavs. But it's a really complicated aspect of it because a lot of the change is emotional. And this is a Warriors team that is very different from a lot of the great teams, the stories of the Jordan rules with the Pistons and everything else, because the Warriors never really had that moment of banging their head against the wall. They did lose a couple playoff series. You know, they lost to the Spurs after they shocked the Nuggets a couple years ago, and then they lost to the Clippers when Bogut was hurt and all of that sort of thing. But they didn't have that real struggle like so many championship teams go through, and then they win a championship, and then they break the wins record, and then they're, you know, coasting until Curry slips on Donis Osmanayunas's sweat, and all of a sudden everything changes. And so whether how they handle that is going to be very interesting, especially when you consider the personal dynamics of all the guys, because when I've dealt with them after the finals at exit interviews, and some of them were on Team USA, of course, they're taking it really personally, and to various degrees, you know, they can. Draymond Green getting suspended for Game 5 of the NBA Finals, you could make a very reasonable argument that that cost the Warriors a championship. Even with Curry's limitations, they would have had three bites at the apple with close to a full staff, other than, you know, what happened to Bogut. And him being out made them a big underdog in that game. Klay disappeared for games at a time in the finals, and, you know, Curry was Curry. You can say it was limitations or whatever. He is owning that to whatever degree. So they can look at it from the sense of, I let my team down. I think that's not the right way to view it, because it was just a series of crazy circumstances and LeBron playing out of his mind, which is awesome to see, to get to experience it. So it is in the eye of the beholder. And the other crazy part about it is that this team, as they were constructed, won't really get a chance at redemption, if you want to call it that, because they are something entirely different now.
Yeah, they are really different. And this is a very interesting point for them, because I do think that they're, you know, going to be a really strong team. I think they're going to be a dominant team. I think they're going to be the best team in the West. But it is the personal aspects of this team, you know, a team that was built so much on the chemistry and how great everyone goes together. You know, everyone is taking it personally and they're blaming themselves. And, you know, that all is in the right spirit. But at the same time, I feel like a team like the Warriors was built so much on having some. I know that Draymond really tested the edge, but I feel like ultimately they were a team built on a really good emotional equilibrium. And you just wonder, you know, if that gets disrupted, you know, how that's going to affect things, because I feel like it's pretty unpredictable.
It certainly is. And we do sometimes overstate and sometimes understate the personalities and how that affects everything. I mean, when you see a team that really underperforms or really overperforms, a lot of times that is something that is a part of the equation. But at the same time, you can't lose sight of the fact that talent wins championships. And while Miami didn't win their first time and they didn't win their last time, you know, they were in the mix every single time. And this Warriors team, if they stay healthy, is a juggernaut in a way that even the team that last year that broke the wins record was not. Because part of when I wrote the Durant piece for the Sporting News in November of last year, that was so why I got so captivated by the idea, is that we have never seen two MVP caliber players, and I mean MVP caliber players being guys who had already won an MVP, playing together in their primes. In the history of the NBA, we've seen a lot of, you know, great players where one was early and one was in their prime, or both were late, or, you know, various collections like that. But Durant at full health and Curry at full health have both won MVP awards, and their games actually make sense together, which is another huge difference for some of the other, let's call them, super teams that we've seen in the recent past.
I can't wait to watch these guys play in the regular season. I know that even in the preseason, honestly, I'm going to watch their first preseason game. I mean, the things that they're going to be able to do, you know, a Durant and Curry pick and roll is going to be incredible. And just the spacing that they're going to have on the court with, you know, four guys, you know, potentially five if they're going, you know, that can all shoot the three. And it's going to be, you know, if you include Iguodala and you say he can knock out a couple corner shots. But, you know, this team is going to be incredible to watch. They do complement each other really well. I really am interested to see, you know, I think Draymond is probably going to lose a lot of touches. And I think he's probably going to be totally fine with the role that he assumes. But like, I'm kind of excited to see like what he's going to do with like, is he going to get like 15 rebounds a game or something?
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. And the one of the big differences, though, that will be a part of the perception of this team is that they won't go to their best lineups very often. So Draymond at center probably won't happen very much in the regular season. So that will lower his rebounding numbers. But the real challenge, and I hadn't thought of this until you started kind of framing it in this way, is that Steve Kerr's job has really shifted from a Greg Popovich issue or challenge to a Phil Jackson challenge. So when Popovich is generally about, you know, making a beautiful basketball, getting the team humming as best as possible, Phil Jackson is great at managing these teams that have incredible talent and personality. And the Warriors, really, the personalities were pretty easy to manage because these guys grew up together. But now Durant is a very different piece. And that doesn't mean that it will fail or anything like that. But the challenge now isn't making the basketball work, because the basketball is going to work. It's making sure that everybody's happy. And also, and this ties in with something that I'm probably going to talk a lot about on Locked On Warriors, which is how Kerr decides to run his rotations, because who plays together and who plays apart will matter a lot, not only in terms of what we see statistically and, you know, how much they beat teams by, but also their happiness. You know, like, will they want to give Durant 10 minutes a game to really run the show like Billy Donovan ended up going to with Oklahoma City? Or will he say, no, you guys need to figure this out and you guys are going to play more together and then have more of a second unit bench mob? There isn't a right answer or wrong answer that at least the two of us can say right now, but everybody will have to kind of figure that out as they go.
It's Danny LaRue from Locked On Warriors with me here on Locked On Blazers as part of our crossover podcast week. We're doing them all over the Locked On Podcast Network, and we have NFL shows that we just added the Seahawks show on the Locked On Podcast Network. So definitely be sure to check out everything on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Danny's show. Danny, I do have a question though. I talked about it a little bit when you asked me in The Athletic after the series was over to talk about what we learned from that series. And one of the things I pointed to was the big man situation for the Warriors. How big of an issue is that still?
I'm not completely sure, because it is something that at their best they won't need that often, because Draymond will be playing center, Durant will be playing the four. But the pieces are definitely different. Zaza Pachulia is more of an offensive guy than Andrew Bogut, who, even with his more limited mobility and everything else, was still one of the five best defensive centers in the league. And they also had this fascinating combination. Mo Spates was inconsistent, but Kerr knew how to use him, which is an incredibly valuable thing. And so they're going to have to cobble it together in a very different way, because David West is a talented guy, has been a part of winning teams, of course, in the recent past. And then what are they going to do with the young guys? So if Kevon Looney is healthy, he actually did show some things both in the D League and Summer League and in practices from what I heard. So they are going to have to manage all of that. But it is a very different thing, because this team isn't going to be focused so much on the regular season. So they'll help and they'll need to figure it out. But when their best five-man lineups involve none of those players, I don't think it's that big an issue.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, what they're going to focus on this season. And after winning 73 games, I guess you really don't have anything else to prove in terms of what, you know, showing your, you know, how many wins you can rack up. But, you know, where do you see them? You know, where do you see them finishing? I mean, do you still think that they'll, you know, run away with the Western Conference, as I think most assume that they will?
Probably, because they can do the double, which actually the Warriors team last year did a little bit, partially because Stephen Curry had that ridiculous season, is that they can win games when they're not at their best. And that is a really different thing. Even Cleveland, during their stretches, I mean, they ran away for a point with the Eastern Conference, and then Toronto came back and did a really good job. But the Warriors can win games without, you know, Curry blowing up for 40 points or Durant getting 30 or however it's going to go like that, because they have a lot of good players. They have a lot of capable defenders. So they could be, you know, humming along at the, let's say, 55-60 win pace, but just winning all of those 50-50 games. The Warriors last year were one of the best clutch teams in NBA history because they just were really good. And so the terrifying prospect of other teams with the Warriors is that you have to knock them out early. Portland actually did this in that regular season game last year, and that is the way to beat this team, because if it's close late and they're healthy, it's going to be really hard. So they could actually coast to a ridiculous number like 65 or 70.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to still be in the high 60s again. I mean, they won 67 the year before. Obviously, that was pretty much the same team. But you know, it's funny, that 67-win team, I know that the other team won 73, but I do feel like, I don't know, it felt like they came from behind like way more. Like they were just the year they won 67. Like they were just able to like come from behind. I just remember watching every game that season. It's like, oh, they're down by 15. They're still going to win this game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they were very different in that way. And also the Warriors in the 67-win year when they won the title, they were more consistent defensively. I think partially because they had to prove themselves in that way. They had, you know, they hadn't really done a whole lot in the playoffs. They'd won one series up to that point because they lost to the Clippers in the first round the year prior. So they brought that intensity top to bottom more consistently. And with their defense and their offense, it's really terrifying. But they didn't have to do that really last year with much consistency. They had those moments like against the Clippers, I think it was early in the season, when they were down 15 and then they won by, I think, 10 or 15 going away. And so they will have those moments from time to time. But you're right that it was a different animal last year. And I think it will be a meaningfully different one this year, too.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I'm very excited for these matchups against these two teams. It does feel like, you know, the I feel like the Warriors bring out the best in the Blazers is what I see. I mean, obviously they're they were the best team in the league last year and they were the champions. So of course they're going to do that to most teams. But I do feel like, you know, the Blazers really do, you know, they can get hot, and when they get hot, it's a fun game against the Warriors.
There is a meaningful difference from what I've been able to tell, and a lot of this is through body language, which is strange because it's something I don't like talking about. But the Warriors, as a team, appear to really dislike some Western Conference teams, the Rockets and the Clippers being the most notable, like on a more visceral personal level. And that doesn't mean every guy hates every guy or anything like that, but just structurally and for a lot of reasons. But then the Spurs and the Blazers, it seems like they have a lot of respect for those teams, and they generally like the guys. And it makes sense because Portland has a lot of good people. Dame has the connection to Oakland as well. And now with Festus was a guy who the Warriors players really liked as well. That is a meaningful difference. And CJ, Dame, Aminu, all of those guys are well-respected from what I can tell by the Warriors and the locker room and all the guys. And they gave them a great series last year. And that can make it more fun. Some people like the idea of animosity, but mutual respect is really fun too, because that means that you can assess them and you respect them. And Portland has played some legitimately great games against the Warriors as well.
Yeah, no, they've had some great moments. Of course, Damian Lillard has had, you know, like four career highs against the Warriors in his career as a Blazer. And I think too, you know, there's the fact that all those guys are pretty well respected. I think also too, the fact that, you know, they're not, I don't like to compare them because they are very different, especially with Klay Thompson's size, but both their backcourts both came from like kind of unheralded college backgrounds. I mean, Klay Thompson, you know, not going to Washington State, and Steph Curry playing at Davidson and the Lehigh Weber State connection. So I think there's just a lot of respect there too, that, you know, both these backcourts, a lot of the leaders on this team all came from kind of unheralded backgrounds. So there is a lot of respect. And Dame Lillard also says like he watches the Warriors. I mean, because a lot of people, if you like basketball and you have League Pass, you're going to watch the Warriors. But Lillard says like he watches the Warriors a lot, not just because he's from Oakland, but just because he, you know, liked to watch them play.
Yeah, there is that as well. And Lillard has, of course, the connection with the area. And also, it really does run top to bottom, because both teams have a lot of role players that can succeed on effort. Ed Davis, you know, and they don't have a lot of dirty players, you know, like that. There, you can think about somebody like Matthew Dellavedova, for example, who can be kind of an antagonist, or Patrick Beverley with the Warriors, given the history with him and Curry, and there are a couple other guys like that. Even Chris Paul, who there's an immense amount of respect, but there's also some animosity there. And so the Blazers Blazers don't have a lot of the negatives as well, which is important, and the Warriors have reached the level that Portland openly aspires to, and that it can create, if you don't have the animosity in the background, that can create a friendly rivalry, you know, kind of the big brother, little brother thing. And also, you talked about the small college thing. Another major parallel between these two teams is that they really did it through the draft and less conventional means. You know, neither had, before Durant, of course, had a really high profile free agent. They mostly drafted their own guys, and even, let's say, Mo Harkless wasn't drafted by Portland, but they picked him up off the scrap heap for a nothing pick. So that's similar enough. You know, it's not exactly the same, but it's pretty close. More like, you know, maybe like Bogut or something like that. And so there is that also meshing, probably. I don't know that Kerr and Stotts have an affinity, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least. And Olshay and Myers probably do as well. And so those organizations can be friendly with one another and still want to beat the stuffing out of each other.
Absolutely. And I think that's a thing with a lot of teams, but I think definitely you're definitely hit it on the nose there with the mutual respect between the teams. I mean, you can see both GMs hanging out before, during the playoff series, Myers and Olshay, and, you know, Stotts always talks about, he's always glowing about the Warriors, and Steve Kerr, I think as well, you know, whenever they talk, you know, he always praises Terry Stotts. And I'm excited for these games this year. I think they're going to be competitive. I think last year's games were a great example of, you know, how fun they can be. And yeah, I'm interested to see how they match up with each other. I'm interested to see Zaza Pachulia in at center for the Warriors. That should be fun. Anything else you'd like to touch on, you know, with regards to these two teams, Danny, you know, just with, you know, expectations or things you're looking for, things you're interested in? I mean, I know we talked about the rotations, but, you know, if there's just one thing that you could really sum up about these two teams, or something that maybe connects them together to look for in the season.
They will probably play really intense, fun games against each other. And the Warriors don't always do that. There are some opponents that they kind of just flatline against, and they do that. But they remember who's played them hard, and they remember who has beaten them. And Portland has done both of those things. Portland, you know, gave them a tough five-game series, won that game at the Moda Center. I think, if I remember correctly, gave them a scare at Oracle after that. I don't remember exactly. But that will be exciting, and of course, Portland will be gunning for the Warriors as well, and so there are regular season games that absolutely do not live up to the hype. There will be many of those during the season, but I don't know if it's three or four this year, but those games should definitely do that and will be must-see TV, not only for both of our fan bases, you know, for Locked On Blazers and Locked On Warriors, but for the league as a whole. And it's also really fun because they're, you know, two teams that are in the Pacific, you know, not the greatest time zone in terms of variety of NBA games, but all of them will be the best game of their time slot.
Yeah, no, that is a big win to have, you know, two of the 7 p.m. Pacific, you know, time slots with really good games, because, you know, a lot of times it'll be 5 o'clock or it'll be 7 o'clock and all the best games are already over and there's no real variety. But yeah, I definitely think you're going to be able to look forward to great games with both of these teams. They're going to play well against each other. They respect each other. Not only, you know, is it competitive, it's high quality basketball, lots of good shot making, lots of good passing. And I think that's one, you know, what these two teams do well is, you know, they are so good at putting the ball in the basket that it's just like when they get going, it's probably my, you know, maybe I'm a little biased just because I watch who the Blazers are playing a lot of times. But I do think it's one of the more aesthetically pleasing matchups in the league as well.
One quick question for you. Outside of Mason Plumlee, who has to be the front runner for this, what Blazers true big man, so we're not going to count Aminu, do you think will deserve and will get the most minutes when everybody's healthy?
Deserve, you know, I think I'm going to answer this in two ways. I think the guy that I would bet on to do that, I think the most likely is obviously Plumlee, and then Myers Leonard, I think, is the guy that you would want, like, in the scenario where you get to the next level, like your best case scenario. Like, I think it's got to be Myers Leonard who gets the most minutes.
Do you think they get to an extension agreement with Mason Plumlee?
I feel like they will, because I wasn't expecting the CJ McCollum extension, and if they have any doubts about Myers Leonard, I think, you know, they'll probably get an extension done. But, you know, I'm just saying that because it seems like Paul Allen's really willing to spend and really is trying to spare no costs. And right now, if they want to guarantee the most wins that they can, they've got to keep Plumlee around. But I do think that they would rather not do it and bet on Myers Leonard becoming, you know, something better than what Plumlee is right now.
I sincerely do not expect that it will reach this point, but if it got all the way to July 8th or whatever day the moratorium ends next year, hopefully there's no lockout, Plumlee would be the single most interesting restricted free agency in the entire league because how he is evaluated by everybody else, where the Blazers are at that point, because who knows what happens with Festus Zeli if he can make the court, Myers Leonard, like that's to me, like that uncertainty is a big reason why I probably wouldn't extend Plumlee. It's just the idea of figuring out all of this stuff, but the pressures of the success that they've had and just keeping everybody happy could certainly push them in the other direction. And even if they don't come to an agreement now, it is entirely possible, maybe even likely, that between the end of the season and, you know, when he would actually hit the market, that they would come to an agreement. But for selfish reasons, if it doesn't, if it lasts until that late, it'll be really, really interesting to see.
Another interesting thing to keep in mind about Mason Plumlee is that Damian Lillard really, really likes playing with him. And really, you know, he was like surprised, you know, do you remember that scuffle with Jimmy Butler that they had, you know, and he gets in there and he, you know, he really like showed something, you know, Dame really saw something in him and really obviously he trusts him a lot in late game situations to handle the ball, pass him the ball as a kind of a safety valve. So, I mean, I know that player influence is not the ultimate decider in a lot of great word. In a lot of front office decisions, but I think it could matter that, you know, Portland's best player really trusts Mason Plumlee, you know, in the foxhole, so to speak.
It depends on the GM, it depends on the player and how much of a voice they have in the process. Another factor that can get lost in the shuffle a little bit with Plumlee, because we think about guys in terms of how long they've been in the league, is that he will turn 27 during the season. So the idea of him progressing and, you know, all that is a little bit overstated because at this point he probably is pretty close to what he is. And that isn't really a criticism. It is just a different way of thinking about it, that you're not getting this, you know, high upside prospect. You're getting a guy who's very important part of your team right now and hoping that he can stay at this level for another 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's going to be really interesting if it gets to that point. Yeah, so this next month, 6 weeks or so before the season, is going to be pretty interesting to watch for Mason Plumlee and see if Portland tries to get an extension done with him before the season starts. Which, you know, they elected to not do that last year with most of their guys that were going to be coming up on the end of their rookie deals.
Yeah, we'll absolutely have to see how it works out. Covering the Warriors, as you know, they have their own cap minutia, which I can talk about, but they don't really have that extension stuff because everybody who could have been extended wasn't and is now gone.
Yeah, a free agency of a different kind this year for you, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks to Eric Garcia Gunderson for taking the time to talk with me. You can listen to Locked On Blazers on Audio Boom or whatever podcast player you like. Eric does a great job. And you can also follow him on Twitter at Eric Gunderson. That's ERIK_GUNDERSEN. Yeah, Eric's a really talented writer, great talker, and it'll be exciting to see him do Locked On Blazers this year. And Portland will be a team to follow. And it's an open question whether they will have maybe not as good of a record, but do as well because the West got stronger. And as we discussed during the podcast, the injury issue will be present. I mean, that's part of what helped Portland do so well, is teams like Memphis and Dallas really falling off because they had players that were vital contributors that fell off, and Portland stayed healthier. Full credit to them for doing so. We will see what Western Conference teams work out for that. Also wanted to let you know that I have a new piece that is coming out shortly on The Athletic about substitution patterns and things like that, which will be an issue that I will talk about at length on this podcast at various moments in time, and that'll be on The Athletic. I don't know exactly when it's coming out. I submitted it recently, and it takes a little while to turn all that around. So you can check it out. It's theathletic.com/SFBay for those of you who are not subscribers. It's going to be awesome this year. I should be helping them run their content and providing plenty of it myself. For those of you who want to stay in tune with Locked On Warriors, and communicate with me, you can do that either personally at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLaRoux, or DannyLarueMBA at gmail.com. I read everything I get, I respond to what I can, and incorporate in the show. You can also reach out to Locked On Warriors if you prefer, Locked On Dubs on Twitter, or Locked On Warriors at gmail.com. And we have a Facebook page as well. And I'm going to try to, with those, I'm going to try to keep it pretty, not bare bones, but really to the substance, because I don't want to waste your time with it and make it so, you know, probably single announcements for podcasts on that, and requests for, you know, submissions and things like that, and try to keep it limited. Maybe I'll put the podcast stuff out more than once on the Twitter feed, just because we're all used to that by now. But it'll be fun to have all that come together. This will be, in all likelihood, unless something crazy happens, the last podcast of this week for Locked On Warriors. However, we will start strong next week with going through all of the positions one by one: point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, and center. Already have some guests lined up working on the rest, and, you know, I can monologue some of them if I have to, but have plenty of people that are interested, and then we're starting to get close to the season. I believe Media Day is the following Monday, and so have a podcast, at least one, on that, and what will we take away from that, because I will be there covering it, and plenty of other things. And so if you have input, things that you want to be a part of the show, you can reach out to me. And I'm thinking more and more about doing at least one mailbag a week. Let me know if you have a preference on doing that a single day, or whether it's more just when there's time, and also probably hit a couple during various shows. You know, if one's running a little bit short, I can answer a question or two in that, and there are plenty of other discussion points that I can use as well. So you can reach out to me anytime you like. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. We are on iTunes now as well, so you should be able to get access in whatever podcast player you like. If you don't have access to it in one that you like to use, but you would like to get Locked On Warriors, let me know, and I will see what's going on in terms of if there's an issue, why we can't be on there. It's a little bit outside of my realm, but I know people who can answer that question, so I'm happy to do that. So reach out to me if you have that issue. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend, and make it a great day.